This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, TV critic for Broadcasting and Cable Magazine and TVWorthWatching.com, in for Terry Gross. Bryan Cranston, who stars in the AMC cable series Breaking Bad, just won the Emmy for Best Actor in a Drama Series, beating out, among others, Hugh Laurie of House, James Spader of Boston Legal, and John Hamm of Mad Men. Cranston has been around Hollywood since the 1970s, moving from guest spots to supporting roles, and from comedies to dramas, and back again. He's best known as Hal, the childlike father on Malcolm in the Middle. But you might also recognize him as Jerry's dentist on Seinfeld, as Agent Stan Grossman in Little Miss Sunshine, or as a guy with a severe headache problem on The X-Files. But earlier this year, Bryan Cranston got his first dramatic series lead, the one that earned him an Emmy. In AMC's Breaking Bad, created by Vince Gilligan, Cranston stars as Walter White, a shy high school chemistry teacher with a pregnant wife, a teen son, and a problem making ends meet. When Walter learns he has inoperable lung cancer, something in him snaps, and he decides to provide for his family the best way he knows how. He teams up with a former student to make and sell crystal meth. It's a very unlikely premise for a TV series, and Bryan Cranston, at first glance, might seem like a very unlikely leading man. I spoke with Bryan Cranston earlier this year when Breaking Bad premiered on AMC. I asked him to talk about the evolution of the show and of his career. Bryan Cranston, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you, David. Good to be here.
I want to start with a clip from Breaking Bad because people who haven't seen the show yet, this will give them a sense of what you're doing and how you're doing it. I'm fascinated by your acting as Walter White because for most of the show, you say so little but convey so much. This is a scene where you're going to come downstairs and walk in on your wife, who's played by Anna Gunn from Deadwood, when she's on the phone making an appointment for you with a cancer specialist.
Yeah, any time on Friday is absolutely fine. Thank you so much for working us in. Can I just put that on a credit card? Great. Perfect. Okay, so we will see you at 10:45 on Friday morning. Thank you so much. Okay. Oh, yes. Honey, the best oncologist. I mean, not even just in New Mexico, but one of the top 10 in the entire nation. His name is Dr. Del Cavoli, and we see him on Friday. I mean, Marie really came through for us. She had her boss call and... Okay. This is good. From here on out, I mean, things are gonna...
What's that we're putting on a credit card?
It's just a deposit kind of thing.
How much of a deposit?
It's $5,000.
$5,000? Jesus. And what's that, just to start? I mean, just to tell me what I already know?
I have to be honest, Bryan. When I heard the premise for this series, I didn't think I'd like the character or the show very much. Mm-hmm. Because we're talking about crystal meth, we're talking about cancer. But you really pulled me in. I still wasn't sure when the hour was over what to think of this guy. And I'm wondering, is that the only script that you saw when you had to decide whether to accept the part or not?
Yes, the only thing I saw was the pilot script. And as an actor, you know if it starts to seep into your soul and you start daydreaming about the character and having nighttime dreams about the character, then it's becoming you or you're becoming it one way or the other. And when I had my first meeting with Vince a year and a half ago, I couldn't help but start saying exactly what I felt about him. I think he should be a little pudgy. I think he should be pale. I think he should be colorless. I think his clothes should be this way. I think he should have this silly mustache that doesn't really convey anything except that it conveys impotence to me. It was unnecessary. And it sort of was a manifestation of what I thought his life was like at that time. basically unnecessary, that he felt useless, invisible to the world, to society, even to himself.
A question about a very dramatic scene in an upcoming episode, which is where you're deciding or confronted with the decision of whether or not to undergo chemotherapy treatments. And your wife stages a sort of intervention and everyone's around and you take turns talking by holding a talking pillow, which gives you the right to speak. And it's a funny idea in a very dramatic scene, and you're the last to speak, and finally you get the talking pillow. And I thought, this is the first time you've had the talking pillow in 4 or 5 episodes. And how hard a scene was that for you to do, because you were quite strong in it?
The thing about an actor approaching a scene like that is you can't for a second think that what you're doing is funny. Because if you do, then there's a slight wink-wink, nod-nod to the audience. Oh, isn't this cute? We're using this talking pillow. And all of us just took this idea that this gave us the right to speak at that time and to speak uninterrupted. And it's very respectful of the audience, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a laugh track to it. And if the audience finds that piece funny, as you did, David, then I think you can smile or laugh if that strikes you that way or not. And ultimately, that is just so juicy to play, because there's a whole wide range of reactions that an audience can have at any particular time, and none is wrong.
We're talking to Bryan Cranston, star of the AMC drama series Breaking Bad. Your resume fascinates me. You seem to have been in the 70s and 80s in one episode of almost everything.
Hmm.
Not several episodes, just one. But, I mean, great shows like Chicago Hope and L.A. Law and 30-something and Hill Street. And then you're in Walker, Texas Ranger, Touched by an Angel, Jake and the Fat Man, and Baywatch.
Mm-hmm. Wide range of good programs and crappy ones.
That's sort of my question. But, I mean,
Clearly
a working actor.
Oh, don't be embarrassed.
But how – and your first job is like on Chips, bless your soul. So, first of all, how do you get started on Chips? And then – how do you balance this career?
Well, when an actor first starts out, you're looking to work, any work. You need money to pay your rent and money to pay for your 8x10 pictures and your resumes and your acting classes. So you need some film on yourself. And that's – you're willing to take just about anything. And remember, in those days, I started in 1979 – there was no record, no permanent record for anyone to keep track of the stuff. So you would accept a terrible show because you needed the money. And I did a movie called Amazon Women from the Moon.
Well, that was John Landis. Wasn't that John Landis?
John Landis did it, but a terrible film. You don't care because you're not going to put it on your resume. It's like it comes and goes. But there's several things that I've done that I've removed from the resume, but now in this world of IMDb, you can't hide. There's
that's really
all
funny.
The schlock that I used to do is now coming back, and it's all right there. So it's a piece of humble pie.
See, I always thought, I mean, I know of writers and producers who have, say, taken MASH off of their resume because they don't want to seem older, which I think is a sin because it's such an incredibly good show. I never thought of just intentionally keeping something off just because it was bad and maybe nobody
Dreck.
Will notice.
Yeah, yeah.
But what do you remember about Chips?
I remember I had this terrible Southern accent. I think I was talking like this. I was talking like a special needs person relative of Gomer Pyle or something. I'll tell you, I was talking like, you know. And it was an interesting experience. I had a wife on the show named Kathy Schauer, who was apparently, and I didn't really know at the time, she was a very pretty woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a Playboy playmate. And it was like, wow, Eric Estrada. That's all he had to find out. Playboy playmate. And, he was after her like nobody's business. And it's like... You know, it's interesting because I heard nothing but bad things about Eric, saying, oh, he does this, he's, you know. And And he was nice to me on the show, I must say.
Well, another bad TV show. I mean, I've been a TV critic since 75, so I can say this. Another bad show you were on, but it had a good result for you, was Airwolf. Wasn't that Jan Michael Vincent in a helicopter? Is that the one I'm thinking of, or am I confusing
that's
that?
Walking. Yeah, no, that's the one. Jan Michael Vincent on his descent in his, into his personal hell, which was horrible. This guy was, you know, had so much promise, and he was late every day, and he had you know, his drinking problem, his drug problem, and there was a scene where we're in a helicopter and they're shooting what's called a poor man's process, which is a helicopter is not actually in the air, but if you shoot from a low angle up, it all you see is sky behind you, and there's a couple grips in the back moving the rotor, and it looks like the whole thing is in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And there was our first AD would say, okay, roll sound, sound speed, here we go, slate it, and Brian, and he would shake his fist to me. That would be my cue to wake up Jan.
Oh.
And to have, not to, seriously, to wake up Jan and have him, you know, act in the scene. And it was such a shame, and I was like, God, this is so horrible, especially for a beginning actor when I was pretty new there. And wanting more than anything to be able to be a part of the acting community and to have the gift that has eventually came to me to become a good working actor. And I don't take it lightly, and I don't have any expectations of what the business owes me. I have no sense of entitlement. I just work.
One thing that I find in common between your part of Hal in Malcolm in the Middle and your new part as Walter in Breaking Bad, and there isn't that much that they have in common, but it's as an actor, a total lack of vanity when it comes to attacking the characters as you see them. And I'd like to play the first scene from Malcolm in the Middle where we meet your character. You're the husband and you're down. The kids are at the breakfast table. They're trying to eat. You're nude, reading a newspaper that's strategically open to cover things while you're reading it, and your wife, Jane Kaczmarek, is shaving your back hair with some hair trimmers.
Huh. Look at this. They're sending an unmanned probe to Venus and letting a bunch of schoolchildren name it. Well, that's gonna end badly.
These clippers are dull already. Honestly, Hal, you're like a monkey.
They do this every month. He has sensitive skin. The hair gets itchy under his clothes.
Yeah, it seems like such a shame to just dump this in the trash. Maybe birds would like to make nests with it, or, I don't know, maybe you boys could use it for school projects. Arms up.
So, that's, what memories does that bring back to you? And is it true that you had to have, for your first scene in a sitcom, or the first scene, maybe they were shot out of sequence, but you had to have yak hair glued all over you to make that scene
work? I have nothing but fond memories of Malcolm in the Middle. It was a fantastic period of my life. Brilliantly written by Linwood Boomer. That was the first scene. The first scene I ever shot in the pilot was the scene where I'm naked in front of all these children. And the person who's in charge of kids, you know, in taking care of them from the Coogan Law, and they have all these rights, which is fantastic now, insisted that in between scenes, I stand behind this black curtain. So apparently, while we're shooting it, my nudity was okay and didn't hurt the retinas of their little eyes. But in between, I had to go stand behind this curtain. But yes, it's true. I was, except for a modesty patch, and believe me, it was very modest, I had nothing else on. It took three makeup artists 4 hours to apply yak hair to my body. And they said it was yak hair, and they told me why. Yak hair most resembles human hair, but it's longer. So they were able to use part of it for the glue and still have part of it that is unmatted and standing out. But that meant I couldn't sit down. So for the entire day that we're shooting this, I never sat down. And I had my arms out most of the time so everything wouldn't get matted. But when it came time to actually shaving this hair off my body, the glue would get stuck in the razor and it would start to pull my skin. So we had to have a casting call for hairy back people. and they brought in all kinds of people. It looked like a carpeteria store where there was Shag and there was Lopile and there was, you know, Berber. And they picked the body type that they felt was most like mine, which is very unfortunate. Mm-hmm. And they had a body double, and it turned out to be one of our Teamster guys. Turned out to be one of the guys that we actually shaved through and did the close-up shot of the hair cutting through the razor cutting through the hair, rather.
We're talking with Bryan Cranston, star of the AMC drama series Breaking Bad. One of the things I learned reading about you for this is that your parents were actors, Joe and Peggy Cranston. Would I know them from anything?
You wouldn't know my mom, and my dad might be hard to remember. I remember when my dad was, he had the real actor's life. His life was up and down and up and down. And I remember him mostly dying in everything that I saw him do. whether he was a soldier on top of the roof in the day that – were the end of the world. I forget what the name of the movie was. The one, the sci-fi movie with the large grasshoppers that took over the city. He was in that saying, Sector 8 is fine here. And we see him die, you know. Or else he was an infantryman, or he was, in the cavalry and then he got shot with an arrow. He was always dying. Hey, Dad's dying tonight, you know, so we'd watch him. But he met my mother in the late 40s in an acting class in Hollywood, and they were all in the same class with Anne Bancroft and David Janssen at the time, and it was kind of a good time for them, and post-war and everything was kind of on the upswing, and they married decided to have children, and that's when my mom decided, well, I'll either have a career or be a mother. And those were the choices for women in those days, and she always regretted that. She always wished that she had pursued both.
One last Breaking Bad question. Do you have friends or family members who have gone through the process of chemotherapy and cancer? And if so, what did that do to your acting approach?
Yes, I do. And in fact, recently my sister-in-law went through breast cancer. And would go with her to her chemotherapy sessions and her radiation sessions. And it's very traumatic. You can feel the energy. It's a palpable trepidation. And you wonder, is this now the beginning of the end of my life? And as positive as you want to remain, it's difficult. And I took that information with me, but when I weighed it against what my character Walter White was going through, it was almost a fair trade-off, because he was just living a life of existence before. And the irony to this is that ever since this death sentence of a lung cancer that is inoperable, he's been more alive and more awake than he has in the past 25 years. So he's, in an odd way, he's accepting it and willing to deal with that set of circumstances.
Bryan Cranston, it was a joy having you on Fresh Air. Thanks very much.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it.
Bryan Cranston, from an interview recorded earlier this year. The star of AMC's Breaking Bad just won the Emmy as Best Actor in a Drama Series. Season 2 of Breaking Bad will premiere early next year.